about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
At the karaoke bar, Greg shows the telltale signs of being wasted. First off, he's in a karaoke bar. On stage, he can't read the lyrics on the monitor. Greg decides to freestyle rap.
It's easy to tell if you've had way too many to drive. But what if you've had just one too many to drive? Never underestimate just a few. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show here at Henry Ford Community College, hosted by myself, Jay Koronek, station advisor here too. And also joining me in the studio today is Dennis, our WHFR news director. He's going to help out in the second half of the show. The first half of our show today, we're continuing our series of interviews with the challengers to the incumbents who are going to be on the ballot on November 3rd. November 3rd, big time election. If you're not registered, sorry, you can't vote there. But why don't you register for the next time around while you're at it so you don't forget again, right? I understand absentee ballots are also available now and going out. So you need to contact the city clerk's office if you're going to be out of town. You don't get those automatically in the mail, you know, as they used to do years ago here in Dearborn. So if you feel you can't make it to the polls on the 3rd, get the absentee ballot. However, as we always say here in the Journal, wait until the last possible minute, find out the deadline for returning that before you send it in, because there's always more information in the papers, and our interviews are not done with the challengers yet here at WHFR either. So, you know, you want to be able to learn as much as you can about all the candidates running. You probably know a lot about the incumbents already from past experience, city council meetings on TV or whatever, but by golly, find out about all your choices and choose your best candidates, of course. Well, as I said, we have Ali Sayed with us in the studio today for his interview. He made a very strong showing in the primary, got into the top 14 out of 25. I think that's good, certainly, and we want to talk to him and find out his thoughts on Dearborn and also his background too. So, welcome, Mr. Sayed. This is a mic check for the next 10 seconds, but why don't you begin by telling us about your background and experience and education for this position of Dearborn City Council member.
Well, thank you for having me. It's honestly an honor and a privilege to be here once again as a past student of the Henry Ford Community College. I was born and raised here in the city of Dearborn in 1981. Graduated from Dearborn High School. I'm a product of our schools and parks, our neighborhoods, all the great attributes our city has offered me as a youth within this community. I currently am the founder and president of Hype Athletics. Hype Athletics is a youth social service provider and athletic skills provider. So we organize training camps, leagues, and tournaments in various sports. We also offer social services like counseling, mentoring, life skills, tutoring to at-risk youth within Western Wayne County. I currently am pursuing a degree in public administration, and You know, as I had mentioned, former student here at Henry Ford, you know, now attending Central Michigan University just down the street, actually.
One of those satellite locations.
Yeah.
For degrees.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think even MSU is in this area somewhere, too. So
yeah, they are.
A lot of competition for our own Dearborn schools. That's a BA degree, of course.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I'm definitely education is where it's at. Let me ask you more about telling us about HYPE. Where did the name come from? Because, you know, HYPE, H-Y-P-E, I know it stands for good things, but it's a sort of a term for an exaggerated description of something. So, obviously, you believe in this group. You founded HYPE yourself?
I did in 2001, and, uh-huh. I can relate to your definition of you know, the description of that name. The truth is, when I was sitting in a small office thinking of a way or a name to call an event, to name an event, it was a 3-on-3 basketball tournament. We're trying to think of, you know, of a few different names. And the one that came up was, you know, let's think of something that's hype, you know, that's live, that's, you know. So it was HYPE Athletics was a direction that we went into, and that's what stuck. And it's, you know.
Did you see this as an alternative to, in the olden days, a couple of decades ago, businesses and especially Adria Appliance funded all kinds of local community athletics and athletic competitions, baseball teams, and I think other things too, maybe. And that's not happening much anymore. Obviously, Adria Appliance is no longer in business here.
Yeah.
Is this taking up some of that need?
Absolutely. I was a participant in Adria Appliance and their youth baseball program that they had at Ford Woods Park. So definitely, you know, we do supplement the service that they once offered along with a few other services that were offered by the Recreation Department. As far as youth sports basketball programs in the summer, soccer programs in the summertime, and throughout the school year, we've also added an after-school program, you know, where youth are serviced through specific programs during crime peak hours. Mm. So based on the location, based on the service that's needed, we may have 8 to 10 week session programs that foster these kids through sports, through counseling and mentoring and you know, tutoring if necessary.
How is it funded? I actually found out that there's both a nonprofit version of HYPE Athletics and a profit version.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between the two, and where do you get your monies from? Is there participation fees?
Yeah, there are participation fees. I'll give you the rundown on the history. In 2001, I actually formed the business HYPE Athletics Incorporated and mm-hmm. offered these services and sold equipment and apparel. I became a distributor for manufacturers that produced, you know, all sorts of sporting goods needs, as well as offering the service. So mm-hmm. In 2007, we applied for a nonprofit status for the service sect of the organization.
Okay,
and we just branched off all the operational aspect of the for-profit, made it into nonprofit. The for-profit is still open, although, you know, used at a minimal level, but we do distribute athletic – we have the capability of distributing athletic equipment and apparel to schools, mm-hmm. recreation facilities, and so on.
Well, I would think if you meet the state or federal government criteria for being a nonprofit business, there's tremendous tax advantages in that. But, of course, it means you have to you're monitored with annual reports and that about what good things are you doing to help the community.
Yeah.
And obviously, in this case, you've got, it seems like, a lot of activities. How can people find out about that? I mean, I'm a resident of Dearborn, and I haven't seen anything like in my mail. Are you mentioned, or do you have a connection with the Dearborn Department of Recreation, or how do you get the word out about HYPE Athletics usually?
Well, we've established alliances, and that's really the practice of our organization is to partner and align ourselves with as many similar organizations as possible. Hmm. So our partnerships are vast. We have partnerships with Wayne County, the state of Michigan. We have all the local municipalities, recreation departments, school districts that we have either aligned ourselves with, partnered with the service, you know, on a few different projects with.
So the young people would mostly find out about this, I mean, if they found out rather than the parents, through the schools, you think?
Absolutely. We do have marketing material that goes out and is distributed to the schools and directly to the students' hands. You know, we also have, depending on the time of the year type of program, marketing material mailed out to residents as well. We've created a vast mailing list over the years of all the past participants. We've actually serviced close to 25,000 kids from 2001 till now. This year we're projecting to service close to 9,000 kids. So, I mean, and this isn't just in Dearborn. I'd say a good 25 to 30% of that is Dearborn-based, but a wide, you know, variety of our programs are offered outside of the city
as well. And there must be a lot of different programs. It's not just competitive athletics.
Yeah, yeah. No,
As you said, workshops, or there's smaller single session activities as well as some continuing things too?
Yeah, there's a wide variety of programs, of course, as you mentioned, not only athletic services. Other than our training camps, our leagues and tournaments, we're also offering social service, seminars for families, counseling sessions for individual or group or even family attendance. We have a great tutoring program. We're actually looking forward to working with the college here. Dr. Mee had mentioned that there's the possibility of creating like a youth professional or career development type of program for the students here. And, you know, we're hoping to align ourselves with the college here as well, to continue offering, you know, the variety of services that we're offering as far as, you know, the services, you know.
Well, if you keep moving in those directions, you have to change your name. Not the hype part, but maybe the athletic part, because you're moving into social services. Access, of course, is very big organization, got started here. There was a great need for individualized help and support for a lot of the immigration that's happened over the last three decades. Yeah. But as people, less immigration, there is always the question of finding your place in the community. Access got into health services and so on, and appropriate to do that. At least it's we're keeping it local and responsive, you know, to the needs of the people. So, well, you're certainly to be commended for the positive community service activities, athletics, and these other programs. I'm just sorry to say I haven't seen more information directly about it. Myself, and I assume in your own campaign that you're trying to let the community know about these programs, because that's been your job. I mean, talk about entrepreneur. You put this together, really, right?
Yeah. It's been a great learning experience. Definitely hands on, you know, as far as, you know, nonprofit work and of the liking. You know, you mentioned something in regards to maybe changing the name from athletics to some sort of service, and it's great that you mentioned that. Actually, we're working currently now. See, nonprofit work is great work. It's obviously to the benefit of those service providers to whatever community you're working within. But we can form an additional nonprofit arm under the existing nonprofit arm. You know, these are IRS laws that are have given opportunities to businesses like myself or foundations like Hype Athletics. So, I mean, with that being said, we're working along those lines. You know, obviously, things like this can't be accomplished overnight. It's taken us years to learn and understand the practices, the proper practices of running nonprofit organizations. And we're thankful now that we have, you know, onboard attorneys, advisors that are on our advisory board. We have, you know, attorneys that are actually consistently working with us, ensuring that, you know, all our practices are directly in line and in tune with the fundamental practice that the IRS has set on.
Of course. Yeah. Very, very important, certainly.
Yeah.
We want to continue our discussions here with, I guess, information about why you decided to. You're very busy. This is still it can be a rapidly growing organization. City council membership, we know, is technically part-time, but sometimes it can expand to a challenge or a problem every day. Sometimes get very busy. I know, of course they pay it as a part-time job too. But why did you decide to run at this point? You haven't run for elective office before, is that right?
Yeah, no, I have not. I'm only 28 years old. It's honestly been a lifelong dream of mine to serve the community. It was one of the main reasons why I formed Hype Athletics, and it's, you know, going back to that, but I relate it to the service that the city council positions offer the community. Hype Athletics was formed to bring unity to the different areas within Dearborn through sports. There's nothing that can, I believe that there's nothing that can unite a community other than sports, or nothing that can do it better than sports. But the endeavor of actually running for this political position has been lifelong. I mean, I see myself serving the community through the administrative and operational levels of the city government, and it's a passion. You know, if you don't love what you do, then you know you shouldn't be doing it. So, serving is obviously the key. Obviously, understood that you know within the city council parameters, you have obligations as far as ordaining laws and zoning and legislative, requirements that are set. You know, and obviously fiscal management, within the operational budget and whatnot.
So you must feel. Let's get into issues. You must feel that there needs to be someone with. Your background and experience and entrepreneurial style on the council. Obviously, I guess youth can be seen as an advantage because of the energy. I mean, you look like you work out yourself, pretty buff, huh? So I have to set an example if you're head of an athletic organization, yeah. I guess. But certainly, you know, you've got the energy and how are you gonna fit that in though, the city council with your Hype Athletics if elected? Just wondering. Well, thought about that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we have directors of positions, you know, within our organization. Okay. And Hype Athletics is really, it's a full-time job. It's 9 to 9, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. for me at many, many times. How will I continue to service the city? You know, you make time for the things that you really want to do. You know, and that's the bottom line. You know, I really want to serve the city at the city council level. And I know my own schedule. I know my commitment to my family and to myself. This isn't something that I would do if I didn't feel I can do it. You know, the organization is running. We're growing. We have great teammates. We've aligned ourselves with great, great individuals, master's degree social workers, so directors of programming, directors of curriculum, directors of actual departments within that area are all covered. You know, it's a very well organized and structured organization, so I don't really need to be completely hands-on as I was bringing up the organization.
Yeah. You were the man for the first couple of years, really, but now you have a large enough organization that as long as you keep in touch and, get good people and there's different positions, you at least can get your Monday nights free, right?
Absolutely.
For the meetings.
Yeah.
Great.
It's still going to be my 9 to 5, you know, it's got to be, you know, I can't let that go.
Let me go into some old issues and see if we can get sort of, one or 2 minute comments about some of the ongoing and older issues here in Dearborn. Obviously, difficult economic times. We have to find ways to save money or generate funds, and maybe we can get into that later, or you want to talk about that along the way. But East and West Dearborn both have different development situations and have problems over the years. West Dearborn still has problems with filling businesses and incomplete work from the developer, which is being litigated right now. Of course, that situation. Mm-hmm. Let's say that situation is like settled out of court or even in court. Although that would take longer. And all of a sudden, the city gets $12 million from Burton Katzman for what they didn't do, which I think what they're asking, $11.6 million or something. What would you spend that on? Something for West Dearborn?
There's a big problem in West Dearborn, not only vacant businesses, but paid parking.
Yeah.
And the city has to assume the expense or cover the expense coming from the two parking structures, okay, through the paid parking revenue,
right.
Dimes, nickels, and quarters, you know, to pay down $1 million debt. The first thing I would do with $12 million is complete the project that was promised to us for the building of those two parking structures.
I think there was a hotel in between
the hotel two. / possibly dorm room student housing,
right.
You know, for the local colleges here, which would assist us in offsetting the expense from the parking structures. The reason why we can't pay down our parking structures is because there's not enough parking within the parking structures to offset that expense. I mean, they're vacant. Yeah. You know,
traffic
they're empty.
Is down, right.
You know, so on top of all that, we're seeing a trickle-down effect to where all the businesses that are, you know, directly affected with this paid parking, you know, are you're seeing that they're becoming upset. They're actually putting the blame directly on the city for that decision. To appease the needs of these businesses, you would do what's necessary, complete the project with that funding, and then remove those paid parking meters, try to help fix the stigma or reputation that's been built for West Dearborn. You know, obviously we voted on paid parking, but the truth be told, we didn't expect paid parking to affect, you know, the businesses, affect the atmosphere, affect the environment as it did today. You know, so now we have to go back and listen to the people. Could it have been a decision that was made by the people, and could it have been wrong? I would say, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's time to go back.
Found money, if we get the settlement from Burton Katzman, or if they just turn around and say, hey, we'll go ahead and do it. You know, I'm not sure they're going to do that, but we got to get businesses in there. I heard, I think it was incumbent Doug Thomas say, it was his assessment, that looking at all the businesses in West Dearborn, really, all we can do is try to attract tourists. I mean, yeah, I know there's a couple grocery stores for local people and you can shop, but it's not a wide range shopping district for people that need stuff every day. Okay, we got a hardware store there too, I know. But, you know, there's no movie theater, there's no, you know, regular live entertainment. Tenney Street Roadhouse, if you remember from a few years back, was a big draw there, I felt. And then because of building code problems and the landlord continually raising the rent, which I've talked about in this show, the rent, he raised it higher, and I did a comparison, I just had a chance to do a comparison, higher than a music venue in Greenwich Village, New York.
Okay. You
know, higher rent per month. I don't want to mention his name. Okay. But he owns a lot of property. That's Mr. Newman, I think. But okay. If I'm wrong about that, I'm wrong. He owns a lot of property there. And he's said he's got some leads, and he's got a number of vacant buildings there, including the old Inca computer facility in that sort of area. And there's a sign up, too, now for the first time in front of Tenney Street Roadhouse. It says, available.
Well, after just, so many years.
Yeah, after like almost 2 years now. Yeah. Nice to have a sign that you can see from Michigan Avenue because it's a wonderful facility for music if properly scheduled. It's got a wonderful kitchen. It was run well. It's just they just couldn't afford to stay there. And I know the city regretted the loss of that venue. So anyway, Doug Thomas feels that it's only good for tourists because we just got mainly bars and restaurants. And so we need his answer was, the best possible connection and hookup with Henry Ford, the Henry Ford, all of the attractions there. But I assume you're probably a supporter of the intermodal train station proposal, if you're familiar with it?
I definitely support that initiative. I think it's a strong and positive move to bring about more traffic to the West Dearborn District. I as well as probably Doug Thomas and every other candidate, have dreams and visions, you know, for our West Downtown District, as well as our East Downtown District, and the other three districts that are available. Yes. I mean, we have a vibrant East Dearborn on Warren Avenue, where I see there's more business and revenue coming into that area than our million, you know, whatever the total $1 billion business district in West Dearborn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I disagree with Doug Thomas in saying that it strictly needs to be a tourist avenue. I see upscale dining. I see, modern day businesses, convenience stores, clothing outlets, the upscale. You know, we have a standard of living in Dearborn, and we need to identify that standard of living. This is the grassroots. Who are we? We are Dearborn. We're proud of being, you know, from the city. You know, we always say, well, we got to compare ourselves to the neighboring cities like Birmingham and Royal Oak. That's not true. They built their foundation upon what we started in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. They looked at Dearborn as a template and said, okay, we want to be like Dearborn, you know, and this is the truth. I mean,
For example, Jacobson's department store, which is upscale over there, and that was a big draw, and other clothing stores and a lot of great variety of businesses, and that's gone now. So how do we attract them back? Do you think, do we offer reduced taxes or...
You gotta have an administration that's willing to work with these developers. Mm-hmm. You know, both sides of the table are butting heads, and they're not working with each other. That's the start of the issue here. That's the main issue. Mm. Okay, Could it be more Newman, or could it be more the city? Who knows? They're upset at each other. Let's bring in a mediator. Besides that, you
bring
know,
a mediator.
Bring
in.
A mediator. Let's squash these differences. Regardless,
I'd like to bring in an arbitrator myself. But anyway,
well, that's a good point as well.
Yeah.
Offer incentives to these developers. Remodel, renovate, bring up to a specific standard. We'll reduce your taxes. Promise us that you're going to bring in a long-term tenant, 5-10 years. We'll guarantee and extend the tax incentive. You know, we're not talking one-third off. You know, just enough to satisfy the loss of revenue that he was expecting to get from the high square footage rates that he had set. You know, lower it $5 a square foot so that, and we'll offset that. You know, what type of businesses? How would I go about attracting these businesses? Obviously, once you deal with the developers and landlords, you can then go forth and seek, you know, the fancier, upscale type of business towards our district. I can see, you know, maybe a Kenneth Cole shopping center, maybe a DKNY or a Liz Claiborne, independent stores coming into the downtown district. We've all been to New York. We've all been to Chicago. We see guest stores walking down, you know, downtown. You see these beautiful Hershey's chocolate, you know, Hershey's factory store, you know, things like that. If we're going to attract, you know, these new age businesses, what we have to work with the developers first, you know. So enough of this, you know, childish going back and forth action that's taking place currently. You know, let's move on. Let's for the sake of the city, let's become productive in the decision making, accurate decision making that we're making.
We're talking here today for our first half hour of our show with Ali Sayed, who is a candidate for the Dearborn City Council on the ballot November 3rd. We have only another 5 minutes to go, and we're going to let you have a minute or so to sum up some of the points we touched on here. In East Dearborn, certainly there's many, many possibilities for improvement. Some of the council didn't like the idea of the health center, which is now called the Dearborn Town Center. Confusing to me, because Fairlane Town Center is a shopping center, but the Dearborn Town Center is basically a medical center. Oh, well, there's only so many names in the world, you know, I guess. But I remember a couple of the council members weren't in favor, even though it's a lot of money, development, and it fills up vacant space there, because the medical center isn't a sort of a recreational thing. I mean, people go there because they're sick, not feeling well. The odds of them afterwards, as they leave, doing shopping or browsing is not real high. Still, it's a business. But Midwest Health Center is moving down into this at some point, and there's a vacancy on Schaefer. Oh, my gosh.
A blighted vacancy. It's going to be very, very difficult to fill in that spot. I want to give you my opinion based on facts with this move that the city made. Obviously, the West Downtown districts receive capture tax revenue with any updated or renovated or even newly constructed buildings. Capture tax revenue, state mandated, where at a specific period in time, whatever the property was assessed at, taxable value was assessed at, after the renovations are made, that reassessed value, that taxable value, is capture tax revenue used for the DDA's purpose to market the district, to, you know, attract new business, whatever it may be. They do it with their money. That was one of the main reasons why they pushed towards that new construction. We have over 20 businesses in the current plaza where the old Midwest, where the current Midwest Center is now, that are dependent on that health facility. Families come in, they got a two-hour wait, they go do their shopping, there's a grocery store, there's a dollar store, there's even a pharmacy there. These are livelihoods that depend on that resource.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving it down the street and telling Redico that they have the ability to attract their own businesses, another new pharmacist, another food court, another, you know, shopping center, whatever it is that they're going to plan on doing over there, is really going to destroy our historic plaza that's been there for over 50 years.
Yeah, I think it really hurt that we lost Kroger's over there, too.
We lost Kroger's.
The shopping center. Yeah, I don't know. There's nothing you can do about that now, but that's still vacant, that facility. So maybe something can happen. Well, again, we need new ideas and support. You feel the administration needs people on the console to keep them on track and redirect them, or so... Let me just briefly ask, and then we'll give you a minute to sum up too, about the about any new ideas, basically, for the city, other than trying to support business directions. What other initiatives, if any? And I'll just say a couple of new ideas that haven't come about is that Mayor Riley talked about, with certain funds becoming available, wind turbines along the Rouge to raise, you know, to generate electricity here in Dearborn that might reduce costs to the residents. Wi-Fi for the whole city. I said that. Although Mayor Guida was almost for that, and then there were some cost problems. So individual businesses wouldn't have to do it, and you know, just everybody could benefit from that. But or I'm into the commuter bike pass for transportation. Unfortunately, none of the present plans that I've seen talk about bike paths between East and West Dearborn. And in fact, for the last 6 months, there's not even a sidewalk that goes between East and West Dearborn because of the road construction. They tore that up and closed it. But those are just some ideas that were in my head. Do you have an initiative, or just one, since we don't have too much time, that you might try to suggest or to try to work out if you were elected?
Well, Ali Sayed is about family, he's about growth, and he's about positive change. These are the things that I'm in. And within each category, there's services, there's needs that are required today. Is there a project, biking transport? Obviously, the story of our lives in Michigan is this road construction. I mean, wherever we put a bike transport, you know, system, there's going to be, you know, some sort of obstacle
issues,
or challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a great idea, though. I really feel strong that the city needs to increase its efforts to focus on the youth, focus on the families within these neighborhoods. It's the neighborhoods that help build the reputation of our community. Okay. Going back to the youth, today's society is breeding criminals. Today, society is breeding criminals. We have music, television, so on and so forth. These kids don't have adequate role models to become the future leaders. And these are the kids that live and reside within our city. Increasing our efforts to create involvement opportunities with these parents, increase activism within the neighborhood associations, clean up our parks, have more preventative services coming from the city, social services, preventative services, educational services. Also to have some form of transparency within the operation of our government to encourage furthermore involvement from our residents. Mm-hmm. I really see an opportunity for Dearborn. What's going to keep residents in Dearborn? Obviously, economic opportunity. You know, obviously, clean and well kept and well maintained neighborhoods. But most importantly, memories. Most importantly, the heritage that we're so proud of here in Dearborn. And that's what we need to try to maintain collectively together. This is not one person within the government that's going to be able to achieve this. This is a whole entire city collectively. And let's, you know, bring back that image of embracing each other, of unity, of dignity, of respect, and move forward for the sake of this great city.
Well, thank you very much for that summary right there, and all great ideas. It's just a matter of making it happen, of course, and working together with city government on top of it. We hope, we wish you very well, good success with getting your message out and your points of view and all of the range of your ideas, and we hope 30 minutes helped more than, like, the 4 minutes I think they gave you at the Henry Ford Village. Tell our listeners briefly about, you have a website for more information, you have a phone number they could call, and you have a fundraiser coming up where people could actually meet you directly there and help your efforts if they chose to do so. Obviously, here our station doesn't support any candidates. We just want to get the messages out. But tell us your website, your phone number, and your about that benefit.
To the listeners, please visit our website at Sayed for Dearborn. That's Sayed for Dearborn.com. You can also email at info for Sayed for Dearborn.com. And, you know, at any time throughout this election period or even after, if there's ever a need for anyone to communicate directly with me, I don't know how what kind of idea this is, but my direct number is 313-942-7095. And to any family, friends, or supporters, please join me October 13th, which is a Tuesday, for our fundraising dinner, which is going to take place at Biblos Banquet Center on Chase Road in East Dearborn. And tickets are $30 for general admission, $25 for students, and if tables are available, at $250 for a table of 10. And I thank you for giving me the chance and opportunity to, you know, explain my platform and message, and what I stand for and hope to maintain within our great city. And to the listeners, please contact me with any concerns, questions, or advice.
Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal right after, two editorial comments from Jim Hightower. And at least I think we will. And we'll be back with more general information about what's happening in Dearborn today. Need to know? WHFR's Tuesday Talk, noon to 2 p.m., features two unique hours of information you can't get from any other Detroit radio station. Need to know about science? Hour 1 from noon to 1 p.m., we're proud to present what we believe to be the best weekly radio science show. Are We Alone? Science Radio for Thinking Species, produced by the SETI Institute and hosted by nationally noted scientist Seth Shostak. Need to know about anything else? Hour 2, 1 to 2 p.m., the WHFR Forum, a wide range of program topics locally selected and, whenever possible, locally produced and hosted, from UFOs to metaphysics to intellectual history, from ecology to health. So check out Tuesday Talk each week, noon to 2 p.m. Science Radio is also available on the internet from SETI.org/radio. For the WHFR Forum shows at any time, our own website, whfr.fm, and click on Forum. Your need to know, our mission. Well, Jim Hightower's announcements didn't play there, and I'm sorry about that, folks, because I know you love Jim Hightower. He has that folksy Texan sort of comment about things, and I think I actually have a commentary by him here, and I'm shuffling through the papers because, you know, the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. You know, that's the way we are. We have to turn the pages on the air. We don't have these fancy things that are all preset and pre-organized and so on. I know one thing, when my news director, Dennis, returns here, one thing that we want to do is talk about what's been happening in the area, and especially in terms of the state of Michigan. We have the latest information about the Lansing situation, and that's of course a mess. It's always a mess. Okay, I'm getting close to it here. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we got to have Jim Hightower, so I'll make believe that I'm a, you know, an old Texan, progressive Texan here. He has this written comment, and in honor of the month of October, which seems to be Halloween month these days commercially. a little overdoing it, I think, folks. In fact, the candy starts appearing in the store before the end of September. Bad diets, folks. Anyway, Jim Hightower has this to say about Wall Street's new Halloween trick. He says, Halloween is still a month away, but ghouls, ghosts, and other grotesque creatures are already roaming American streets, possibly preparing to knock at your door. What makes them so scream-out-loud horrifying is that they are the newly issued spawn of Shriek, Wall Street. the very same greed-fueled bankers who brought us the disaster of 2008's financial crash have created another exotic financial horror to replace their securitized subprime mortgage packages that exploded all over us. Wall Street wizards have been down in their corporate basements working furtively to fabricate some new get-rich-quick financial gimmick, and holy Frankenstein, can we say that on the radio? I think so. They've done it. It's a scheme based on the mundane but huge life insurance market. Wall Street intends to tap into the $26 trillion worth of life insurance policies that Americans hold using a financial mechanism called life settlements, quote unquote. Often the ill and elderly need cash for assisted living or myriad other reasons, and a small network of insurance brokers exists to offer them a sizable pile of money in exchange for being named the beneficiary of the policy. A broker might pay $400,000 for a $1 million policy. Wall Streeters intend to turn these life settlements into a big boon for investment banks and super-rich speculators. First, they will take over the broker side of the business, setting up extensive networks of heavily advertised life settlement agencies across the country to entice sick and old folks into settlements. You can imagine the come-ons. Free cash. Cash in before you die. You can cheat death. Those are all suggested slogans, he's saying. Jim Hightower continues, next, Wall Street banks will securitize, quote-unquote, these settlements. For example, they will package thousands of them into bonds that then they'll sell for hefty fees to big investors around the globe. As a result, when Uncle Bob croaks in Dubuque, some speculator in Dubai will collect Bob's life insurance payout. Drooling bankers anticipate a $500 billion market for this hustle. That's half a trillion dollars, folks. Even as Washington discusses ways to regulate Wall Street's earlier frenzied securitization lunacy, the giant banks are working themselves into this next frenzy. As one giddily exclaimed, we're hoping to get a herd stampeding, unquote. New York Times reports that Credit Suisse, that's a big bank in Switzerland, is already shouting, yippity-ti-yo, quote, building a financial assembly line to buy large numbers of life insurance policies, package and resell them, just as Wall Street did with subprime securities. Similarly, reports the Times, quote, Goldman Sachs has developed a saleable index of life settlements, enabling investors to bet on whether people will live longer than expected or die sooner than planned. Oh, my goodness. While this game of grave robbing for fun and profit is exhilarating for the investing elite, it will be a downer for life insurance customers, for it means that the price of policies will go up. This is because insurance companies base their price on the actuarial calculation that numerous policyholders will pay premiums for years, but then cancel their policies before they die due to personal financial reasons, family breakups, and so forth. In these cases, the insurers collect a wealth of premiums without having to pay out a dime. But this and there's also people I know that they die and their policy was lost and their family can't even find where they had insurance, and so insurance company just, it's pure profit. They don't have to pay off, and that happens a lot. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a lot more than you'd think. But this calculation is to be wrecked by Wall Street's intrusion into the one straightforward relationship between insurer and insured. So why should we go along with this real-life horror, says Jim Hightower. He says, as suggested by Forbes magazine columnist Michael Melello, Congress could and should implement a simple reform stating that there's no payout on any life insurance policy that is, quote, transferred into an investable security, unquote. This would still allow life settlements for the relatively few people that actually need them. And we see those ads on TV, you know, I want cash now, you know, and so on. Sure, you lose a lot of potential money, but if you really need new cash now, that's different. That is different, okay? And so this policy is very straightforward and simple, and he says it would drive a stake in the cold hearts of Wall Street profiteers. What a happy Halloween then that would be. Okay, that's Jim Hightower. Sorry we didn't get a chance to play the pre-recorded version during the show, but those are his words. And, of course, as always on the show, the opinions expressed here are those only of myself, my co-host, and our guest, and not necessarily anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. So, Dennis, our news director at WHFR, what do you think of the current Michigan state budget situation?
I think that we had a two-hour shutdown, and that's half as long as last time. So that's progress. I also think that there was the one thing, of course, I was concerned about was the proposed $218 per student that they wanted to do. Well, this would, be, of course, be statewide, but it would include the Dearborn schools. And they did not do that. And that makes me happy. I do have a daughter in Dearborn schools. That's what I think.
All right. Yes. Well, you know, today, and it's different than a couple days ago, but today it's been reported, and we updated our information online, folks, for this show as recently as 12:16 this afternoon. It's now 1:43 on Friday. If you're listening to the podcast, well, things may be different a few days from now. Legislature has gone home. A job well done for the weekend. Of course, they don't work Fridays. They don't work Saturdays or Sundays, even though basically we don't really have a budget. Governor Granholm says that she'll veto parts of the new state budget next week. So Republicans withheld a half dozen bills, hoping to force her to negotiate changes. So we still have gridlock. And remember, our state legislature, two houses, as they say, the House of Representatives and the Senate. In the Senate, the Republicans are in the majority. In the House, the Dems are in the majority. Now, Republicans are holding fast, no new taxes. You can read their lips or whatever, whatever ways they express themselves up there. The problem is there's no money. And you, in cutting services, we see massive cuts in the budgets that have stood here. For example, about K-12, here's the report that I have from MLive.com, which I just discovered today. I assume they know what they're talking about. A Peter Luke reported this earlier this morning in terms of Lansing. What happens next? He says there's plenty of unfinished business. Lawmakers have not approved the budget for K-12 education. They haven't approved that yet, okay? With the next school aid payment due on October 20th, because the year started July 1st, folks. The budget for the schools started July 1st, and they don't even know what money they're not going to have in the future. There may be no more payments from the state in a few months, or reduced payments. That's how they pay the schools, by monthly checks that hopefully don't bounce. And he says there aren't the votes in the House to cut per student spending by the $218 amount agreed to by the leadership. That's the House where the Democrats are. But there's been many other cuts. So the question is there more money out there for education? The answer is, according to Peter Luke, school groups are asking lawmakers to tap some of the $200 million in federal stimulus money being held in reserve for the 2011 budget. You know, we're already in the 2010 budget, you know, 2010 to 2011, so some of the money they're trying to save till next year. But using it all assumes an upturn in the Michigan economy in the next 12 months. Probably not going to happen anywhere in the country, folks. But he goes on to say, without job growth, schools could be staring at a $500 per student reduction next year. He says that could push nearly half the school districts in the state into the red, and they're supposed to have balanced budgets. The Michigan Promise Scholarship, both the House and the Senate eliminated the program, but Governor Jennifer Granholm said yesterday, that she wants to restore funding to provide some 96,000 students with the $1,000 installment they were to get this year. However, she can't restore it by herself. With the program, students earn up to $4,000, qualifying through scores on state standardized tests. The scholarship gets paid with $2,000 the first 2 years after high school graduation, and the remainder after completing 60 college credits, which would be 2 full years, 4 semesters at 15 hours each. That's full time, assuming you don't have to work at a job or something. You can manage maybe 5 classes. 15 credit hours. But anyway, that's the second payment. The money goes directly from the state to the colleges, with students seeing the scholarship on their bill. Wonderful plan, but it's not definitely there, even though the governor says she wants to restore it, but where are we going to get the money? So it's very complicated, folks. If you think there's a plan or you think something's in place, it isn't yet. Okay? That's what we got to tell you. It isn't yet. I got an email from personal email from Sierra Club indicating that Gino Polidori, here in Dearborn, our representative, that specifically he voted to cut 39% of monies to clean water and clean air maintenance in Michigan. Now, of course, we all want clean water and clean air, and actually, sorry to say this, folks, but we don't have it. We don't have. Oh, we're not being. We're not dying immediately. But Michigan, as in true of many other states, we don't really have clean water. Even when I was in Traverse City, I went to an environmental meeting over the summer, and the water looks clean, but there's invasive species growing there. We're talking about plants, nasty bacteria and fish in the water, and a high percentage of Prozac. That should make us feel better. But, you know, that's the tranquilizer. But that's in all the Michigan lakes because it people take it. Most popular tranquilizer. I've got an article about this from Public Citizen, too, that more people are on tranquilizers like Prozac and other things than ever before.
Unknowingly in this case.
Well, what happens is, yeah, in this case, but what happens is that those drugs, they go through the system. They might do something good in your body or not, but they go through the system, excreted in your bodily waste, and it goes back into the water system, into the sewer system, and then back into the lake. So even though, like, the water, not in the Detroit area, but in Lake Michigan, let's say, Traverse City area, looks crystal clear and clean, it's got all these contaminants of different human drugs. And is that good for us? No. For example, I understand that the Prozac affects a lot of the fish.
I know. I noticed when I caught some, they were extremely relaxed.
Yes. But it actually changes their personality, so they're not as aggressive about fighting off predators, and therefore we're talking about extinctions of major groups of fish because they're not, they're all laid back and, hey, man, it's cool. Go take a nibble on me. I don't mind. Yeah, and then they're dead. And so it does affect us. It's not that the Prozac comes back at us again in the water because it's too small for that, but it affects the smaller creatures and animals in a negative way. Gosh knows we got a crisis in dying off of frog populations. We got a crisis in the dying off of bees. Honeybees. Without the honeybees, we don't have any food, really, folks. They got to cross-pollinate the food for us. And the water in Michigan is not. And Polidori and other Democrats, they voted a 39% cut in environmental spending. Now, maybe it's programs we don't need. I don't know. But the Sierra Club is very, very upset. And you know, we don't have any way to directly. I was looking for actually Mr. Polidori today at the Welcome Center opening, and wasn't there. But it is his day off from Lansing, so they got a tough battle going on there. One of the suggestions made, and this was in this came up this morning, even on WDET's report too. Freshman lawmakers, you know, they don't care about term limits because they just got there. But from both parties called yesterday for a constitutional amendment to require passage of a new state budget by July 1st. In other words, you can't fool around. I was going to say some other nasty word. You can't not make a decision because the schools and all these other enterprises in Michigan have to know what their budget is, how much money they have. And so it's got to be straightened out, not by October 1st. You know, I even heard Granholm saying, well, just pass an extension. Or whatever, to keep the offices open and keep the checks flowing, you know. That's not an answer. And I guess it's gridlock. I guess it's legislators that either don't know what they're doing or they're so partisan that they can't see, you know, the forest for the trees. The big problems we've got to resolve now. And I personally, I have to agree with certain, I guess, Democrats, sorry to say, that tax the rich. That's my opinion for the day, and everybody who's rich is going to now email me and say, I don't want to pay more taxes. Well, shame on you. Warren Buffett does, and he's a billionaire. Okay, I don't know how Microsoft President Bill Gates feels about that, because he's the richest guy in the world. Okay, there's some other, Dennis is showing me some suggestions here of other funds. Impose a 3% fee on gross receipts of doctors. Oh, my gosh.
Well, there's nothing new in
the come from, Dennis?
Free press.
I don't want to trust them. a new tax on plastic water bottles. Raise tax on a pack of cigarettes. Yeah, those are cancer sticks anyway.
Sure.
I don't care about that.
Hey, now that I don't smoke,
I am all for it. Another reason not to smoke.
Exactly.
Okay. Higher tax on tobacco. 6% tax on entertainment. And sports tickets, yeah, because nobody can afford to go to the stadium anyway. I mean, the tickets for Lions or Tigers or whatever, huge. I can't believe. I mean, I'd rather go to a play than have to spend that on, well, anyway, to each their own. But, you know, it looks like a rich person's activity, entertainment activity, to go to sports these
days. Your play
days,
would so. Be taxed also, any entertainment.
Yeah. Delay a scheduled increase in earned income tax credit. I don't understand that one.
That would be for lower income
in
the state.
Yeah, I don't qualify for that one. Eliminate some business tax deductions. Well, business doesn't like that. Well, you know, a couple of the bigger proposals, folks, like Michigan fair tax. And I don't have time to go over that now, but we brought this up here before. Wonderful idea for accountability. And Ali Sayed, who was our guest today in the first half hour, talked about transparency. That's right. That just means honesty, up front with the way things are. And it's a great campaign slogan, but we've got to start doing it, you know. And I have to side these days with Warren Buffett and even Ralph Nader. He's got a fiction book out, but the title of it is Only the Super Rich Can Save Us. That there are progressive super rich that know that they're not paying their fair share of taxes. They're not giving enough back. You know, even Bill Gates, the richest guy in the world, only started his foundation to help poor kids around the world about 5-6 years ago. I mean, he went for like 20 years of the richest guy in the world without even thinking about giving anything back. Just keep collecting those profits and so on. But the man who funds MoveOn.com, George something or other, it's a Greek name, super rich, hundreds of millions, if not billions. He's a progressive, and might be an interesting answer. And I don't see any other answer. I'm sorry, rich people, but you know, the difference between rich and poor, there's almost no middle class in America. It's gotten bigger and bigger gap for years. Fewer and fewer people control most of the money in this country, like less than 5%. Now I think it's less than 3% control over half the money in the country. They can afford all the big cars, all the big houses, all the big trips. Oh, they lost a little money in the stock market, but you know, they're free and clear in this big economic crisis for the majority of us people. And why not increase taxes on the super rich? Or some of these other proposals, which indirectly do it. I don't know about the, you know, all the doctors, but the many doctors are rich. I know many doctors who are just barely keeping alive, though, with their private practices. So, yeah. And,
but it's 3%. So right. Your point is well taken. The people that aren't making as much, it wouldn't hit them as hard.
Yeah.
So that's exactly
3%
right.
Of it. A couple, you know, 10 or 20 million a year is a whatever the percentage is, folks, we need to do some real changes. Constitutional amendment, remember, in 2010, next November, we get to, on the ballot, automatically, we get a choice of, do we want a constitutional convention to look at big ideas to change the state and get it on track? Simpler, bigger ideas. I'd suggest, that July 1st budget deadline. I suggest fair tax. I suggest ending term limits. I'd suggest, statewide health care for all, since it looks like the government's not going to do it now. I still have hope that, you know, it's going to work out, but oh well. So we've still got a mess here in Michigan, folks. If you read Jack Lessenberry from Metro Times this week, he didn't know how it was going to come out. He thought it would end badly. It's not ending yet. It's not over. And taxes are not going to be considered. So look for cuts in everything that's important from the state, whether it's education or environmental protection. Our prisons will release more people. Why do we have so many? Why does Michigan have more people in prison than any other state per capita? Why? You know, because if you don't have a job, you turn to crime. Why? That isn't the connection either, by the way, folks. So we've got some real issues there. What can we do, Dennis, in the last 4 minutes?
We can talk about the fact that Dearborn Public Schools have met the requirements for the adequate yearly progress, or otherwise known as the AYP.
Mm-hmm.
So basically our fine schools are given a standard by the state, and they have met them. They've met them now 2 years in a row.
Well, they've met the progress, but in fact, their testing levels are still below the state averages in many areas.
They are. In most areas, actually, but within 8 percentage points.
They continue to improve.
They continue to improve. And so, in effect, they have the state has a monitoring system where if you're on this, for lack of a better term, you're on probation within this program. Mm-hmm. They're monitoring them very heavily, and they keep in close contact with parents, students, administrators, what have you. And Fordson, should they do this again, which is meet the requirements with the same success, they will be off that probation, and they will be the last of the school. So I don't, progress. I like the word, and I think it applies here. Adequate yearly progress.
Yep.
We were. Hey,
I'm throwing something good out there.
We're thinking, and we didn't get a chance to talk about this week, Dennis, but here at WHFR, we had a chance to be part of an information program coming up next year. And we haven't decided we're going to do it yet, but it's all about the homeless. You know, talk about people who are disenfranchised.
Absolutely.
They can't even vote because they don't have a home. They don't have a residence, so you can't vote. Isn't there something wrong with that? If you don't have a house, you don't live in an apartment even, you can't vote in this country. There's got to be something wrong with that, because they need help more than anybody. It seems like they should want to vote. But, of course, if you don't have a residence, you don't know which district you're voting in. But maybe they could vote at large.
Well,
or I don't know.
Through a family member, maybe?
Somebody's got to vouch for them that they exist, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. But Detroit, and I just looked this up, and just a cautionary note, Detroit is the only one of the top 10 homeless lists, most homeless, that are in two separate lists that are different. So it's these metro areas with the highest number of people experiencing homelessness. Detroit is third. First, Los Angeles, then New York City, and then Detroit is up there. And this is in raw numbers. We got 18,000 homeless in this area, which is, well, it's not that many. Yeah, it's a ton. Because New York City, all of New York City only has 50,000. And New York City is much bigger area.
Oh, much bigger
than us. So we got 18,000. Then the other list is the highest rates of homelessness per 10,000. So not just raw numbers, but also percent. Detroit's at the top. We have the highest percent of homelessness in the whole country. The second highest is Mendocino County, California. Well, at least the weather is warm there.
Right.
You can live outdoors all year long. How do we do that with homelessness in the middle of winter? We're so cold here, and today so wet. You know, it's amazing that the homeless can even survive, unless they die off fast in Detroit, but they're replaced by other people quickly. Who knows the cycle there? The third highest percent of homelessness is Monroe County, Florida. And I don't know if that's
that does make
Miami
you wonder,
area or not.
Mendocino and Monroe. Well, it does also raises the question how our programs for the homeless, because if we have that many, I mean, that again, I'm trying to twist things a little positive here, Jay. So the fact is that the programs that we do have in place, I'd like to find out more about those to service. What did you say, 18,000 people?
Yep, that's the number right now, maybe more. So we're going to consider again, an extended national connection program about homelessness in America. I mean, we're here to do alternative ideas that people don't want to listen to, but they're going to have to, like the budget issue in Michigan and taking care of our environment. These are ongoing, everyday problems, along with employment, you know, along with regulating the banks. And I'm just going to conclude today, we're waiting for Highway 61 to start because of the parking situation and the weather. Joanne, who is our host of the Highway 61 show, Blues, we're about a minute off, and I know our podcast is going to cut off now. But if you get a chance, try to catch Capitalism, a Love Story. Michigan-based filmmaker Michael Moore. Yeah, he was born here, but no. He's got his business here now, too. This movie was made in Michigan, made in the Traverse City area, edited there. It was shot in different places, but it was edited and